This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the SportsMap Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. It is hour number two. Hey, Will Graves is going to join us, Associated Press. We'll talk Pittsburgh Steelers as they are in the playoffs and will face off against Kansas City, a team that throttled them 2 weeks ago, the day after Christmas. It was like 36-10. But they'll get a rematch against Kansas City, and they come in limping. There's so many problems, but yet they are a playoff team. We'll talk about that, Ben Roethlisberger, et cetera. That is all coming up in this hour. We've got the good, the bad, and the dumb, of course. That is coming up next, but the national championship still front and center. Now, last night, Nick Saban said all the right things about Kirby Smart and about Georgia and winning that game. And, it, you know, people are giving Saban a lot of credit for having class. And let me say this. I think it's great that everybody wants to say, look, Nick Saban's real class act and all that stuff. It's great. But I also don't think you need to be overly crediting a guy for being, you know, generous like that. I mean, it's his, it is a, the opposite of what he did would have been complain and make excuses, which is not what Saban does. So I think Saban took losing the right way, like you probably should. But the other thing too is he is giving credit to a former, you know, assistant, the first assistant to beat him, by the way, in that kind of level, and he did so by following the blueprint that Nick Saban designed when he got to Alabama coming in from the Miami Dolphins. The way in 2007 that Saban built the Crimson Tide, the way he began all the levels of recruiting and all the departments that he needed to make sure everything in Alabama was done in a way that he could control it and he could, you know, basically get a team that he wanted. Kirby Smart copied that. So, yes, are you disappointed for your team? Of course. Are you disappointed for all the hard work that your team put into the season? Absolutely. And I don't think Nick Saban is okay with losing. I'm not saying that. But I also think that there is a little bit of pride in that the guy that beat him followed him in every single way, copied the formula, and did so excellent, did so at his alma mater, right? And I think that even though you kind of, you know, will have to lick your wounds and, you know, sort of, you know, live with the fact that you lost that football game, I think there is a moment where he went, you know what? My former assistant is doing good things at Georgia. Now we got a problem because we got to, you know, have that team in our radar all the time. But I think in the end, there's a little bit of pride that Kirby Smart took the blueprint and ran with it. Good, the bad, and the dumb next on Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it is the good, the bad, and the dumb, where we go over the good, the bad, and the dumb. But before we do, looking to save money this year, look at Allstate. You can get the protection you need at the low rates you want. With Allstate, you can lower your rates, not your expectations. Visit Allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. All right, Mr. Culver, let's get the good of the day.
A crazy, crazy story video coming out of Southern California.
Right.
It's been making its rounds all over the place. A pilot crashed on some train tracks.
And a pilot crashed on train tracks. Okay.
Yeah, that's good, right?
That's good. Like, he saved the plane, I'm assuming.
No. He crashed on train tracks. Some officers who were in the area noticed the plane crash, ran to his rescue, pulled him mere seconds from that plane being absolutely destroyed by a train.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm talking... It's something straight out of a movie, you know, like they just rescued the damsel as the train just went by. I mean, I'm not talking, you're talking like 5 seconds in between pulling him to safety. Still alive. He was the only one in the plane. I mean, he was all cut up and, you know, probably had some broken whatever, but police officers just stood there, yanked him out of this plane, and then train just came through and just demolished this plane.
Oh, my
God. Guy certainly would have died.
Wow.
It was, I mean, it's a crazy video to watch.
So of all the times to land the plane on the train tracks,
yeah.
That happened to be a time when a train was coming.
Yeah, and he landed. I know the area where he was. It's an airport, a private airport called Whiteman Airport, and it's, you know, it's a kind of a, it's not really, it's in the middle of LA, but it's, but for me to describe it, it's kind of like a rural area in the middle of LA, which is, you know, hard to imagine. So there's not a lot of buildings around. He just couldn't make it back to the runway of the airport. And yeah, just, I mean, you know, it happens every so often where you see these planes just kind of set it down on a wide street.
Yeah.
And he did his best. But I mean, it was, yeah, it's a harrowing video. But
a train was coming.
But a good job to these police officers for, you know, just doing what they do best.
I always watch, like, when I watch movies and like Twilight Zones or whatever from the 50s, there was always a scene where a car is stuck on the highway, and a driver is on a track and it's stuck. And then the train is coming, and they're gassing it, and they're gassing it, and they're gassing it, and they can't. Why don't you just get out of the car and just walk away and let the train blast your car to smithereens? At least you're alive. They always have this sense of panic because they're still in the car. It's like, unlock the door and then just walk out, and you don't even have to go. The beauty about trains is you don't even have to go that far to be out of its way.
Yeah,
just a couple of steps and you're on the side of the track.
You know, maybe move in the opposite direction that the train is coming, because you don't want to get hit by debris.
You don't want to get hit by your car being turned into metal like shrapnel. You don't want that.
No.
But just open the door and leave the car.
Fun story. Years ago, I was actually on a train that hit a car.
Did you really? How bad was that?
It wasn't. I mean, it kind of like clipped the fender of the car, but it went, or the rear bumper, I should say. But what always amazed me was that this car, I mean, they didn't move forward just a little inch more.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how do you not know a train is coming?
Right. Yeah, you should know.
And I've always thought about it this, like, if I was ever in that situation, you know, say, you know, I went onto the tracks and I shouldn't have, you know, but, you know, I was absent-minded or just being a complete idiot, I'm hitting the car in front of me. I'm tapping their bumper saying, hey, can you move forward a little bit more, please?
Yeah. Yikes.
I mean, I'm not slamming into the back of their car, but like, you know, you drive far enough so the bumpers meet and they're like, hey, what's going on? You make that gesture like, move forward. I'm about to get destroyed.
Exactly. All right. What's the bat of the day?
The bat of the day is the Manny cast was a revelation this year, wouldn't you say?
I liked it.
It is coming back. But and actually, I think we're going to get one more come Monday. A wild card version of the Manny cast.
Because we got a Monday night game.
We got a Monday night game. But unfortunately, I don't think any current NFL player is ever going to appear on the Manny cast again.
Because of?
The Manny cast curse.
Yep.
Players went 0-7 when they appeared on the Manny cast.
Man, that's a trend, right? That's just not a coincidence.
No,
that's a real curse. Like, that one, is a real supernatural curse.
What'd you say? One or two is a trend.
Right.
Seven is a curse.
Like, that's real voodoo magic.
Yeah, so if you appeared on the Manny cast, that following week, your team lost.
You're right.
Every time.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
So, yeah, no, I don't, you know, if you wanted Tom Brady's going to have to retire if you wanted to appear back on.
Haven't people made jokes about it? Like, didn't Phil Mickelson make some joke about it?
Yeah.
Like, saying, I don't want to be on
there. He's like, he was nervous about coming on because he has a tournament this weekend.
Yeah.
Or no, he was okay with coming on that weekend because he's not playing in a tournament that weekend.
That's right. That's right. Exactly.
But, yeah.
And of course.
Travis Kelce, Russell Wilson, Gronk, Stafford, Brady, Josh Allen, and Aaron Rodgers all lost the following week.
Wow. That's
when appearing.
Great. Well, if I'm the Mannings, I roll with that. I exploit that. I have Eli with a little cauldron, you know, stirring up a brew.
If they get
in bat wings and things like that.
If they get another current player, like, hey, and on this week we have Derrick Henry.
Would it be classless if they had an exorcism on the Manning cast? Like, they brought in a real, like, Catholic priest to exorcise the demons of that curse?
No, they should do that. They should do that,
so
like, you know, first game, first Manning cast next year.
They should, you know. Or they could get, like, Father Guido Sarducci, if he's still doing that bit. That's 40 years old, but if he's still doing that bit.
There's some kids going, who?
Yeah, I know. I'm dating myself. But nevertheless, I'm just in this 1980 mode, thanks to Georgia.
Maybe bring on a few Ghostbusters?
Maybe some Ghostbusters, yeah, whatever it may be. Exercise the demons.
If you want current players, this is what you're going to have to do. Isn't there like a couple of like famous psychics?
Yeah, like, well, I don't know who. Like,
yeah.
No, I don't know who's still alive, but yeah, let's bring on some psychics. What about John Edwards? What him? Is he the guy that talks to the dead?
Is
or
he
claims to?
I'll go with you. Yes, he is.
Yeah, he is. Okay,
I don't know.
He is. I don't know.
But there's got to be someone that you know we'd all recognize and go, oh yeah, what are, like Miss Cleo.
Miss Cleo, bring Miss Cleo on board. Yeah. Never exercise the man and cast demon. By the way, let me ask you. Let's say you met somebody. Remember that movie Thinner, where that gypsy cursed that guy?
No.
Yo, okay, never mind. I tried to give you a reference. You know every movie. That's why
I hit you with that.
All right. Let's say you met somebody, and they just went up to you and they said, "I'm going to curse you with whatever." How many instances of that would you need before you believed you were really cursed? Like let's say
maybe three or four, right?
Like three or four, right, before you really went. Maybe there is something to this, because most of us would blow it off, like, whatever. You believe in that voodoo. But if somebody cursed you with something, like, I don't know, whatever it is. I can't even think of something off the top
of my
head.
That first time, it's just an amazing coincidence. Second time, like,
but like three or four, wouldn't you go?
Yeah, because even after two.
There might be something to this, and I don't know. Maybe there is something. Maybe there is another realm of the universe that I'm not tapping into. That's what I'm getting with O for seven in the Manning cast. Like, at what point do, like, let's say it continues next year and players that show up are, it's like O for 12. Like, what if it's O for 13?
Like, by the time.
At what point do we go, wait a minute, there is something outside of ourselves that is manipulating this?
Because look, okay, they had Matt Stafford on in week 3. Right, and then he lost week 4. Then there was a layoff between Stafford and Brady, about a 4-week layoff in between. But after Stafford, you might have been, once you sit there and go, "Wow, Rams lost."
Yeah.
Okay, but we have Tom Brady on the following week, or
sure.
4 weeks from now, a month from now, and then when Tom Brady appeared and he gets housed, they lose the following week. That's when it's all said and done for me. And if I'm a player, I'm not showing up. Now, Aaron Rodgers won because he appeared in week 17 and they lost in week 18. I can kind of forgive that one.
Yeah, that was kind of a...
Because the Packers weren't playing for anything.
Right.
But still, they lost to the Lions. But
all right, well, what's the dumb of the day?
Okay. I reserve the right to change my mind about the dumb.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay? But I know we brought it up before in the past, but the first trailer for a dramatized version of The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air was released yesterday.
Ooh.
And it's a new series that's going to appear on Peacock Plus or whatever.
So
whatever,
give me
it
more
is.
Details about this. It's a re.
It's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, right? All new cast, obviously, but it's a dramatized version, not the comedy.
I don't know if I like that.
Yeah, that's. But yeah. I reserve the right to change my mind.
Okay. I don't know if I like that.
But it's, Will is in trouble, in West Philadelphia. He's at a basketball game, gets in a scrap. He pulls a gun out and shoots it into the air to kind of break up the fight. Police charge him, arrest him. Then he's sent to Bel Air to live with his Uncle Phil and Aunt Viv. And, he has to learn kind of the ropes of Bel Air. And, I don't know.
There's something interesting about that take the comedic element out of that story.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about that that is intriguing, but I don't know if...
Here's the deal with a show like that, right? I'm in it for the first episode.
Yeah.
And then I don't think I'm in it anymore.
Right.
I think I'm in it to see how the story evolves. I mean, they've got to have some good cliffhanger at the end of that episode to entice me to come back for number two.
Here's a thing I don't know about, but my daughter does. Do you watch Riverdale?
I know of it.
Okay,
I know where you're going with this.
My daughter watches Riverdale.
Yeah.
And she told me it's the Archie comics, but a dramatized version of the Archie comics.
Yeah, I have caught an episode or three.
And she loves it, and everybody I know that watches it loves it. So maybe there's something to this.
Maybe.
Right, where they said, look, take the comedic element of it. This is actually the makings of a very, very good drama.
Yeah, I mean, it shows.
We're going to make it serious, like you said. Like remember, because he got in one little fight and his mom got scared.
Yeah.
This is, I shot a gun and got charged, and you've just taken, the seriousness up a level. This might be pretty good.
And it felt like in the trailer that there's still an antagonist from Philly who's going to be searching for him.
Okay, that all right. Now we're on. All right. So, you know what? But I'm with you on the dumb, but I'm with you on the maybe this is not bad.
Reserve the right to pull it back if need be.
I don't subscribe to Peacock, so I'm going to have to take people's word for it.
We get it for free through our cable company.
I may have to now. Like, what else do I got to subscribe to in this crazy world of entertainment?
Yeah, it's well, you remember how everyone's like, cut the cord.
Yeah, cut the cord.
Now it's like, well, what's the point? It's the same.
They're never
going to
let you cut the cord. They're going to tease you, and they're using social media like, do you watch Yellowstone? Why not? Are you an American?
Yeah, I know.
And you're like, I don't get Paramount. Well, why not? Apparently, you don't love America. And you're like,
my wife has been watching it. She's been trying to get me to watch it. And I said, I need to finish Ted Lasso first, which I did.
Yes.
And now I'm watching Yellowstone, and I, you know, I'm like only an episode in, and I was like, I can get into the show.
I know. I got another one I got to subscribe to because I heard this show is good, too.
I found it relaxing. I don't know what that says. You know, there was a part of me, and I was like, you know, you ever thought about just packing it all in and moving up to Montana to work on a ranch?
There's a FOMO aspect to it because everybody's buzzing about it, and you're not watching it. And you're like, some people get pride on that. Like, I get tired of people going, I've never seen an episode of Breaking Bad. I'm like, well, then you missed out on one of the greatest TV shows. Like, stop bragging about that. Like you missed out on one of the greatest television shows of all time. Good.
Oh,
good. I'm glad you're proud of yourself that you missed on something everybody else was watching.
Another dumb for us. We didn't honor the fact that yesterday was Sopranos Day.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That was Sopranos Day. Yeah, that's right.
All of a sudden, everything on my timeline was Sopranos-esque. Oh, I'm like, why is this all here? I get it
now. That's right. All right, that's the good, the bad, and the dumb. Will Graves is going to join Associated Press with Tuck Steelers and what kind of mountain they have to climb to beat Kansas City coming up on Sunday night. As we continue, it's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We've got Will Graves coming up in 10 minutes. We'll talk Steelers with him. I got to tell you, I'm still amazed the Steelers are in the playoffs. I still haven't really quite processed this.
You and me both, brother.
As a fan, man. I still just don't know how to feel about this. Because
I don't mind that the Steelers are in the playoffs. I just wish there was another team.
Yeah, exactly. No, I don't blame you. I don't blame you whatsoever. Bill Barnwell at ESPN.com had a really good rundown of that overtime, kind of really breaking down that overtime of that Sunday night game. And I was like how, you know, the Raiders were doing this and the Chargers were doing this and, you know, the decision to do this, whatever it was. And it was really, really interesting. But in the end, I've said many, many times, you always root for your team to make the postseason. And this is a Steelers team that is so flawed, it's ridiculous. I mean, they might be one of the worst teams ever to enter the playoffs with how many things they're like last in or near last in. And the fact that they've managed a record that is good enough to be in this postseason is crazy. I mean, it's crazy. And if it was a 16-game schedule and the same system that we used to have, four division winners and two wildcards, it'd be nowhere near it. And yet, because we had an extra game, that they could win an extra game, and teams could lose an extra game, and then we had an extra team, they're now the seventh seed in the playoffs. So under the old system, they're nowhere near it. They're onto a losing record, but now they're in a position to to go to the playoffs. And look, I know strange things can happen. Believe me, I've seen it over. We've all seen it in our lifetime many times. But this is just the idea of them beating Kansas City in Kansas City is insane to me. It's insane. I know everybody wants to be a little optimistic and just it's all like 0-0 now, and I'm a playoff team and you're a playoff team. Yeah, but I'm a playoff team that can't stop the run and can't run the ball and has holes on defense and has an aging quarterback that can't throw. Like, there's like, you know what I mean? It's that. It's not we're 12-4 and you're 12-4 and we do things great and you do things great. It's we barely do anything good and you do a lot of things great. Like, that's the way the Kansas City-Pittsburgh matchup is right now. So we'll talk to Will Graves coming up about that. Again, Georgia winning the national title, first time since 1980 that they're champions of college football. You got to go all the way back to Herschel Walker when he ran the football for the Bulldogs to find the last time they won a national championship with Vince Dooley running the show. Kirby Smart goes back to his alma mater and gets the job done. He wins the title, and Stetson Bennett, who had a bad game in the SEC title game, redeemed himself, playing well enough in the second half. The early part of that game, I don't think he was playing well at all. I just don't. But he did overcome that costly fumble and did go on to throw two touchdown passes. The defense did the rest, including a pick six near the end that won it for Georgia. As I've been saying this morning, what does this mean for the sport of college football? Well, right now, what it means is there is a new kid on the block. Just like Dabo Sweeney, when he got that first national championship, there is now a new team to be, be in contention. But Dabo, when he won that first national title with Deshaun Watson and then later with Trevor Lawrence, you know, their run was pretty good. They had a good little chunk of time where they were constantly in the playoff, constantly in the picture. And I think I can see Georgia doing that now, where they are going to be legitimate championship contenders if Kirby Smart continues to bring in the elite talent to Athens. They weren't always like that, and that's the thing. I mean, as good as they were not always one of the top teams of college football. And now I think they are. And I think there can be a really cool conference battle between him and Nick Saban, and they can go back and forth on this. And this is what Texas, by the way, this is what Texas and Oklahoma are going to be walking into when they get into the SEC. I mean, it's all fun and games when you look at the numbers on the paper, but when you look at what your fans really, really want out of the deal, it's going to be really hard to come by, right? Fans don't care if you make money. They want titles. Georgia has made hundreds of millions of dollars, if not billions of dollars, with their athletic programs over the 40 years since they last won a national football championship, from baseball to basketball to women's basketball to whatever. You know, they've made money after money after money in bringing in all the sorts of money from the boosters and whatever it is that they're selling, et cetera. But they didn't have this. They didn't have, and this is what fans want. So if you're Texas or Oklahoma and you're in the SEC and these two teams are the teams you're bumping heads with and you can't seem to get over the hump and pop one of these in one of the divisions, your fan base is going to go, yeah, I'm glad we're getting a big chunk of the SEC network money, but we're nowhere near a national championship. So thanks for moving to the SEC. At least in the Big 12, we could have won the Big 12 and sort of convinced everybody we belonged in the playoff, and then who knows what happens. But now that we're in the SEC and we're, rolling in the cash, what are we doing finishing third, fourth, fifth in our divisions? And that's what they could be running into. Because, again, what these two guys do best, Kirby Smart and Nick Saban, what they do best is they recruit. They'll recruit in their area, and they'll recruit in your area, too. They know how to do it, right? I mean, Brock Bowers is a great example. I mean, that kid's from California. He is 6'5 and is an NFL prospect right now as a freshman. He is that good.
Yeah.
You see how Alabama, they needed three guys to take him down on that one catch. He's a beast, right? And he went to Georgia to do exactly what they did last night.
Did you get last night, too, like when Saban and Kirby came together at the end of the game, that it was almost like a, not really a passing of the torch, but it was like, okay, we're on equal ground now.
Yeah.
There was a little bit something different. I mean, obviously, there was a conversation there that was a lot longer, and we know that these two guys have history. I had forgotten that they were at Miami with the Dolphins together.
Yeah, I mean, he's been a long-time assistant, yeah.
Saban literally brought him everywhere.
And that's what I was saying earlier. It's like, look, Saban was not cool with losing that game last night. Of course not. He's a competitor.
Yeah.
And he's got 100 guys plus staff that he wants to take care of. They worked really hard to win that game last night. And he's not going to just blow it off because Kirby Smart, one of his assistants, won it and he's happy for him. He's not going to blow off the pain of his team not winning that title. They worked their tails off to try to win that game, and they came up short. So he's going to honor that. But at the same time, he's got to feel a little pride for
proud.
Kirby Smart. He's got to be proud of Kirby Smart.
Yeah.
Because I was saying earlier, he took the blueprint and ran with the blueprint. Nick Saban basically said, I showed you how to do this. Go do this. And he did it.
Yeah.
He did it. And
executed
he
it perfectly.
He executed it perfectly.
The only reason why I was sitting there is like, if that was Dabo, that's just like, hey, great job.
Yeah.
And he's running away from him as quickly as he ran over there. But with Kirby, it was, you could see it in his eyes. Like, it was like, a proud teacher moment.
Sure it was.
That he's like, it's like, you learned.
And now there may be a new team to contend with every year for Alabama. every year out Georgia could be in their way. And that's cool. And that'll be good for the conference. Steelers talk next.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
Well, they entered with like a 9% chance of making the postseason, but they did. The Steelers are in. They are the seventh seed, 9-7-1. They beat Baltimore. They needed a bunch of things to happen their way. They did happen their way. Let's go to the Progressive Guest Line. Progressive made it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. Will Graves joins us in the Associated Press to talk about this. How are you, Will?
I'm good, guys. How are y'all?
I'm good. I'm really curious, just initially, before we get to this team, the state of Steeler Nation right now. I think there are some teams that you genuinely love because they're championship worthy, and then there are teams fans love because even if they fall short, there's something about a scrappy bunch of teams with a lot of things going wrong for it making the playoffs. How is Steeler Nation reacting to this particular team and what they've accomplished?
You know, the organization finds itself in a weird spot where, you know, they're sort of between eras. But I think my think is I think there is an appreciation not just for Ben Roethlisberger, but sort of the idea that they always go for it. They always try to win. I mean, think of this. They're not a good team. I mean, nobody can watch them play and think, well, this is a quality elite NFL team. But, I mean, they're in the playoffs again. I mean, it's the 10th time in 15 seasons under Mike Tomlin. And it's, you know, somebody said maybe he's a witch doctor with the way that he's sort of patched this together. But I think there is an appreciation. I think, I was partly as a, you know, somebody that covers the team and it has for 10 plus years. I mean, I was of the idea that they should have hit the full reboot last year and said, hey, Ben, we appreciate the, you know, seeing Canton in 5 years, but we need to start, you know, the reboot now. And they did everything. If you look at their offense, they did do that, except at the position where you need, that's the most important to make that decision. Because I didn't see what was the point of them coming back this year if they're not going to be any better than they were last year. I think getting to the playoffs is a, you know, a pretty decent accomplishment, and I've made this joke for a while. I mean, because people said when Ben came back last year, they didn't want his last game to be that playoff loss to the Browns. And I brought up, if Dan Marino can get boat raced 62-7 in his last game, then Ben can, you know, go out losing to the Browns. But hey, maybe Ben will get to go out losing 62-7. Because I don't like their chances this Sunday. But in general, I think there is a sense of relief. I think that for the Steelers fans, it's better to be in than not in, even when the team is obviously not a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Of all the things that they're struggling with, what has been the biggest thing that has plagued this football team all season?
I think, you know, if you're in a big picture, I mean, look, it's obvious that Ben is not the quarterback he was even 3 or 4 years ago. But, you know, the defensive line, you know, Stephon Tuitt hasn't played at all this year, had surgery, you know, over the summer, lost his brother in a hit-and-run crash over the summer. That has affected him deeply, and I think that's contributed his absence. And then in week two, you know, they beat Buffalo in week one, and then Tyson Alualu, their veteran nose tackle, goes out in week two with a fractured ankle against the Raiders. And the run defense has just not – they don't have the horses to kind of withstand the loss of those two guys. And, I mean, they finished with the worst run defense in the league, which is so antithetical to what the Steelers, I mean, you know, for the last 50 years. The secondary has been spotty at times over the last 10 years, but the run defense has always been good. And to me, that is the biggest, you know, their inability to get stops on the ground is been the biggest reason that they've, you know, gotten – I mean, when they lose, they really lose. I mean, they get blown out, which is uncharacteristic. But part of that is teams get ahead, and then they can run the ball, and Steelers never get it back. And, you know, then it's 36-10 against the Chiefs, you know. So that's the single biggest issue plaguing this team.
One of the things about the NFL, and it's kind of cruel, but in a way it's just the way it is that players don't normally get to say, hey, I'm pretty much going to be done, or this may likely be my last game, and that fans can have that celebratory moment. It usually comes after the season where you don't get to do that. What was it like at Heinz Field just to see the way that city and the way those fans were saying, hey, we do have an opportunity to say thank you to this guy?
It was, I mean, I am stunned that he made that decision. I know that, you know, that Wednesday when he usually meets with the media before the Browns game, the consensus was, you know, we're going to ask him about this and he's not going to say anything. And instead he kind of did, which to me cements the idea that this is it. I mean, this is a guy, let's remember that he's been hinting at, like, you know, because he didn't get along with Todd Haley. I mean, he's been hinting since like 2016 that this might be it, right? So Haley's moved on, obviously, but you know, I do think that he, I mean, it wasn't self-serving, I don't think. I'm not really, and I think he didn't want it to, because self-serving would have been to say, like, in August, this is it. And then the whole year is about, is this it? And I think for the most part, he did a good job of kind of keeping that at bay until we got to the very end. So, and it was, I mean, it was pretty cool. Look, this guy has a complicated history for off the field stuff, but I think, you know, if you look at the evolution of him in general as a person, I mean, you know, I think if you had told Steeler fans in 2008 that when Ben retires in 2021 or whatever, that he's going to have a wife and three kids and have this image, you know, as a dad, as a family man, I think they would have been like, yeah, you're crazy. I mean, my first day on the job here in Pittsburgh was the day that he got married in 2011. Well, I stand across the street with some TV people, and, you know, all these Steeler people go to this small church in the northern suburbs. I walk back down to the strip mall where I parked my car. There are four Steeler fans sitting in the RAV4 wearing jerseys. And I swear, this is the God's honest truth. Two of them told me that the marriage was an arranged marriage because the Rooneys told him he had to get married in order to save his career. I swear to God, I mean, this is absolutely true. And so, and now you look at him, you know, that image of him walking down the tunnel, you know, holding one of his kids' hands and his wife in the other, and the two older ones sort of walking along. I mean, isn't that what every athlete wants? Right. And
absolutely.
I think, you know, it wasn't really over the top either, because it's not like he had some brilliant game, you know. I mean, I think it was just sort of, you know, like a celebration of the fact that they've kind of made it through here. And it is, you know, as somebody who's been here now for 10 years, which is the entirety of his, you know, not the back half of his career. I mean, then you sort of realize, uh-oh. What comes after this? I think he has been, in some ways, much like Mike, like Tomlin, taken for granted in terms of what he's able to do and his performance. Sometimes they're a victim of their own success in that way. But, you know, I think it was cool. I'm not going to lie. I am stunned that we are still talking about them. I was assuming that, you know, I'd write my season wrap up yesterday, and then Tom would have a press conference late, probably early next week, and start pointing towards the draft or whatever. And, you know, they're still working, which is, I mean, look, I grew up in the DC suburbs in the 80s. First game I ever went to was the 82 NFC Championship game, since I was seven, went between the Redskins and the Cowboys. You know, and I graduated, by the time I graduated high school, they'd won three Super Bowls, and they've been terrible for the last 30 years, right? And so I do think that, you know, you look at what the Steelers do, you have to have a deep respect for the fact that, I mean, even when they're bad, they're sort of good. I mean, it's remarkable.
I think we talked about this last time. This is one of those organizations that just doesn't go 3-13. They just don't go 2-14. No matter how bad things are around them, they find a way to keep themselves around 500, even in bad years. That being said, what has that meant? I mean, are they in salary cap hell next year? Are they going to have a hard time rebuilding this thing? I mean, it all starts at the quarterback, but they need a lot more help than just a QB.
They do, but actually, they do have money. And that was my point last year looking into this year. I was sort of like, why not just give Ben his gold watch and get him measured for his jacket in Canton and bite the bullet, and either you go with Mason Rudolph and you see what you have, and then either two things work out, either you're good or you're bad, and then you have can make decisions going forward. They still don't know where they're at. But they have money to spend, but it seems to me, I mean, right now they have 45-ish million in cap room, and that depends on where the cap number lies at. They could create some more room if guys like if Stephon Tua doesn't come back, which nobody knows. But they have a lot of holes. I mean, you know, the offensive line, which we knew was going to be patchwork, is just not – it just hasn't worked out for them. It just hasn't – it hasn't gelled. That's one of the reasons the offense looks the way it does. It's not just that Ben can't throw it 50 yards on a rope anymore. It's also the fact that the line can't give him time to do that, right? You look at they have holes along the defensive line that need to be addressed. I mean, if they can fix the trenches, I think the rest of it will sort of, like, I don't think Mason Rudolph is terrible. I mean, they went 8-8 2 years ago with him and Duck Hodges, who was an undrafted rookie free agent. Right. So, and this team looks like that team, to be honest with you, except the fact that Ben's the quarterback. But if their games look very similar, like when the Steelers win, it's low scoring. I mean, you mentioned even when they're bad, they find a way to win. I mean, I kind of outlined it yesterday. You could go through five or six games that they won and point to, or the tie against the Lions, and point to, like, how did that happen? You know, why did the Browns, who have, you know, Nick Chubb, decide to have Baker Mayfield try to beat them twice instead of trying to gash the NFL's worst run defense? Why did the Titans put the ball in the hands of Ryan Tannehill on an ugly day in which he turned it over four times? And the Steelers had 168 yards of total offense and still won the game. It's almost like coaches see Mike Tomlin on the other sideline and like lose their mind. Like they just forget what they're good at. Like I don't know if you looked at them, does some Jedi mind stuff. I mean, even the Lions game, you know, Ben didn't play because he had COVID, but the Lions were missing a ton of people, including their starting kicker. So they had their backup punter attempt a 40-yarder and a 40-yard field goal in overtime. Like if the normal kicker's playing, that kick's good, and the Steelers lose that game and they're 9-8 and they're out of the playoffs. I mean, it is crazy how thin the margin of error is for them to be successful. And you know, when things don't go well, they get crushed. I mean, the Bengals crushed them twice. The Chiefs had their way with them. You know, the Vikings were up 29-0 at one point. The Chargers were up 27-10. And we can point to comebacks in a couple of those games. But even Mike Tomlin has said, you know, that's lipstick on a pig, basically, that there is, you know, that is just – they were successful because teams changed the way they were defending because they were up four touchdowns. So it is crazy. It is – I mean, this team is – this might be the worst playoff team. They had a team in 89 that made it in Chuck Knoll's last play. And they were – not very good, and they managed to kind of – it was built in sort of the same way, but that team didn't have a Hall of Fame quarterback and a Hall of Fame outside linebacker and, you know, all pros, you know, on the defensive line of Cam Hayward and Minkah Fitzpatrick in the secondary. So, I mean, it is – I mean, they're negative 55-point differential, and they're still in the playoffs. I mean, and you look at the way the league goes, I think they should lose this Sunday. I think it's – you know, but it's not out of the realm of possibility for them to – I think they'll cover for sure. I think the line is 13. And who knows? I mean, maybe Andy Reid just has blacked out in the middle of the game and, you know, Patrick Mahomes turns into, you know, like – I can't even – I'm trying to remember the massive string of mediocre Kansas City quarterbacks of my lifetime. Just insert one here, Elvis Gerbach or whatever, right? So, you know, maybe Nick Castle, right? What was that kid? Matt Castle, right? So maybe that's what happens. But I don't know. I think it should just be an appreciation. This week should be like an appreciation of how good the franchise has it, even when it's, quote, not good.
Right. Well, great stuff. Really appreciate your time. Thank you so much. Enjoy the game this weekend, my friend. Thank you.
All right. Yep.
You got it. Will Graves, Associated Press, on the Pittsburgh Steelers will play Kansas City. And we will get to Kansas City later in this week, but he's right. This has got a lot of holes, and they lost 36-10, and it could be like that again come Sunday night. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks to Will Graves for joining us, talking Steelers. They get ready for Kansas City. This hour, Wake Up Call, presented by Rocket Mortgage. You need a mortgage to fit your life. Rocket can. All right, I'm going to give you a little Ron Culver. I'm going to give you a little Steelers history real quick. Okay, you ready? There are two seasons where something similar happened to Pittsburgh en route to the postseason. The team you mentioned in 1989, they lost their first two games by a combined 92-10 score. Okay? They finished 9-7, but at the end of the year, they needed a whole bunch of things to take place for them to make the playoffs, and they did make the playoffs. They went to Houston and beat Houston, a good team, by the way, at the Astrodome. And then they went to Denver, and they played really well against Denver and almost pulled it off. There was a drop pass late, and then it was perfect. It was Mark Stock was the receiver, and he had the ball in his hands, and he just turned upfield, and he dropped it. And that was, I think it was on second down. And it was third down, and Brister, it was loud, and Brister fumbled the snap, and the Broncos recovered, and they pulled off the win. But the Steelers led for a lot of that game against the Denver Broncos, the Denver Broncos back then. They led most of the game, and they just weren't good enough to play 60 minutes with Denver. And yet, that's one of the beloved teams. And then, of course, there was the 2005 Steelers that needed to win their last four games of the regular season just to get into the playoffs, and did. Went to beat Cincinnati on the road, beat Indianapolis and Peyton Manning on the road. That's the famous Ben Roethlisberger jogging back. It was Nick Harper that caught like a fumble or an interception, whatever it was, turnover, trying to return it back for a touchdown. And Roethlisberger was walking back and then tripped him. And then they beat Denver and won the Super Bowl. The difference is this team is not either one of those teams. Those teams had really good players, and they weren't terrible football teams. This might be the worst playoff team in the history. In terms of statistically, this might be the worst team to ever make the playoffs, because there is a new playoff level that we had to go through. And I think the Steelers being a 7 seed with all of their problems and all this, how bad they are at various things, they might be the worst to ever make the playoffs.